Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
This is Mike Edison, host of Art Senses a Seizure, as you're listening to the Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, please visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Something growing out my neck. It's the other head. The skin upraised, it's cracked and dry, and it's not so perfect, and it's not so perfect on the other side.
When I look at you, it's like you're staring back at me. When you find yourself, it seems to have. Naturally.
Always standing in the dead fashion line. I think I'm waiting too long. Said I'm waiting too long.
I said I'm waiting too long.
Then he said that I'm always by your side. And that I'm not that perfect. And I'm not that perfect. And I'm not that perfect.
When I look at you, it's like you're staring back at me. When you find yourself, it seems to happen naturally. When I look at you,
always waiting,
it's like you're staring back at me. When you find yourself
staring into the wondering eyes of the other hand.
When you think to yourself, think of yourself. When you think to yourself, do you think of yourself? When you think to yourself,
waiting, I'm watching.
Do you think of yourself?
I can see from behind.
When you think to yourself,
look at me, don't look at them.
Do you think of yourself?
Gone deeper inside.
When you think to yourself,
think of from to the case.
When you think to yourself,
examples are suffering.
Do you think of
always
yourself?
Always simply
do you think of yourself? When you think to yourself,
do you think yourself?
Do you think of
when
yourself?
You think of
when you think to yourself,
do you think of yourself?
Do you think of
when
yourself?
You think of yourself?
Oh, man. Welcome to Snacky Tunes. I'm one half your host, Darren Bresnitz. The other half, Greg Bresnitz, is upstate at some wedding. He texted me very early in the day with the very amazing, I'm drunk. We have wine guy, Justin Cherno.
Hey, what's up?
Who I think was also at a wedding with Greg a while back.
Still kind of drunk from it.
Still
last
kind of
year.
Drunk from it. Justin is filling in as co-host. Congratulations on Four Horsemen.
Thank you.
Opening, I think, since the last time we had you on.
That would be, yeah, that's right.
And we'll have you all you guys in. How's the restaurant going?
Restaurant's going great. It's, you know, we made it. We're still open. We haven't burned it down. It's been 3.5 months, I guess. And people seem to be coming and, you know, drinking a lot of wine, and it's been great.
Awesome. I love it there.
Thank you. We love having you.
Yeah, that potato dish. Come on. Thrice fried, right?
Thrice fried.
Thrice fried. Four times would be illegal.
We just keep frying it until somebody orders it.
They're just constantly frying. We have a very awesome and packed all food show today. Daniel Willis from Clove Club. Daniel, what was that first song that you played for us?
That was Brothers on the Slide by San Mandy.
Nice. Super on the Slide.
Super on the Slide, yeah. They are, yeah, they were a group of kind of immigrants, really, I suppose what you call them, but all different types of African orientation from Ghana, and they all sort of settled in London and, yeah, created around sort of three albums of amazing kind of African kind of funk, but while all being in London.
Amazing. The great melting pot of London.
Exactly.
First up, though, we have Cal Bergen and Mads Riflund. Cal from the North Festival and Mads from Acme. Boys, welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Thank you.
To say that Nordic cuisine has become popular in the last 5 years would be a bit of an understatement. What do you think makes Nordic cuisine so popular, and why did it become popular at the time it did?
Well, I mean, I think Nordic cuisine was a great representative of a lot of stuff that was happening across the globe at right. the same time. The same kind of movement that was happening with Mats and the other guys back in the Nordic region was happening here in the States. It was happening in Australia. It was coming up in France. But the Nordic cuisine had, you know, became the steam engine, so to speak, for it. It had some great representatives, obviously, with René being such a huge profile. And so I think a lot of the things that were happening across the globe were kind of translated by the Nordic cuisine, and thereby it became the steam engine for locavore, slow food, and a lot of these movements that are really interesting.
At what point do you start to realize that something's happening? Especially being at a place like Noma, which became the epicenter for all this, do you start to go, all right, we've sort of been cooking and we're doing well, but you start to feel this sea change?
I don't know when it was, but from the beginning we just knew there was something special.
Yeah.
And you know, just feed that all the time and just keep on doing it. And one day, if you believe in yourself, I think everything will be a success. I don't know when and what was happening in a way, but we just did it.
I mean, I feel like especially at a restaurant like that, you sort of, I don't want to say put your head down, but you just keep going into work, turning out great food, and then one day you pick your head up and you go, we've done something different and special.
But I don't think we were thinking about we have to do something different. I just think we were proud of who we were and where we was in that time of life, and we're just cooking with what we had in the backyard, and it just became a success.
Yeah, is it one of those things where people who've been cooking Nordic food, it's just what they did, and then everyone else sort of went, oh, wait, they've been doing what we all want to be doing with food?
Yeah, I think so, in a way. But, you know, the Italian have done this for so long. The Greek and the French people have done the same thing. But I think what we did in the beginning was Denmark didn't have that voice at that time.
Right.
And we just had to put it out there. Just had to tell. We also have a story to tell.
Yeah.
We have to be proud of the land we are living in. So we start cooking with the things we had in our backyard. The fridge was our backyard. So we didn't import anything. We didn't take anything from France and cook with that. We just used the things we had there. And suddenly, you know, it's a little bit different and people are looking that way. Because everything that's different is interesting in a way, sometimes.
So, do you feel that every great food movement or change like that needs an ambassador?
You need somebody who can tell the story.
Right.
If the story is not told right, then people would not understand it.
When you came to the States and started cooking, you know, you're talking about things being in your backyard. Obviously, you have to make all these new relationships with your purveyors, with your farms, and obviously, it seems to be tougher here to really find products on the level that seemed to be easier to find in a small, you know, in a smaller country? You're dealing with this huge country and this huge place. Was it hard for you to round up good products?
It was very hard, and it was like starting in kindergarten. So, you know, everything was new here, and you know, I walked down the streets. I didn't know the street names. You know, I didn't have any friends, and it was difficult. And you go to Union Square Market, you don't have built up any relationships with anybody. But you know, everybody's very friendly, and everybody want to give something. And when you dig into the ground and then just start learning about the terroir here and start get relationship with farmers and purveyors, then you know it's getting easier. So now maybe I'm after 4 years, I'm in second or third grade. So you have all the amazing stuff here. You know, it's such a big country, yeah, and the Northeast here is amazing. There's so many things growing here we didn't have in Denmark. So of course there was a lot of the same things, but you also have different things. So I'm not saying that the Nordic countries have something that's much better than here, because we also have things here that's better than there. So
right.
In a way, it's the same. I'm very proud of where I am right now, and I think what we have in New York is there's a really good story to tell here, because we have such a good terroir here. We just have to use it better, and then we are doing it right now.
But one thing to remember also in terms of the Nordic cuisine was that it wasn't like everything was there. It wasn't like there were all these amazing artists and producers and farmers
right. Everywhere.
This was built hand in hand with a lot of these chefs and personalities. Like they started in literally in kindergarten back then as well. You went out into the beach and started picking herbs and started like working with farmers to develop things that you wanted to have in your restaurant. So there was a huge part of the development of the Nordic cuisine as well, was to find and nurture all of these amazing artists and producers that are there now.
Of course, yeah.
I mean, that's so great to be like, you know, we're trying to go for this profile or this dish. Can you help grow this for me or help raise this for me? And then they already know that someone's going to buy that from them.
Well, that's probably the impediment for a lot of people. I think I've run into people a lot that say like, oh, I'd love to grow this, but there's no one that wants it. Or I guess finding the right person to have that conversation with and letting them know that you can support them.
That's true.
It's really important.
Now, the North Festival started in 2012.
Yes, correct.
And what made you feel that? I mean, I remember when all these little Nordic restaurants started popping up in New York and Brooklyn and things like that. And what gave you the idea to be like, we got to celebrate this. We got to hold on to this moment.
Well, I mean, for me, it was I'd been based in Denmark, kind of in the eye of the storm for a while, and when you're based there, all of a sudden everything is Nordic and everything's happening and it's exploding. At some point, you begin to think that, well, you know what? Probably people are tired of this now. And then about 3 years ago, I moved to New York, and I kind of realized that it was only just beginning here. All these awesome restaurants, like Mass has been here for about a year. Freddie was doing Aska, Daniel was about to open up Luxus. And it was like, it felt like the perfect time to really celebrate this. And also like Aquavit was being revitalized and becoming relevant and interesting again. So
yeah. Shout out to the original suite, Marcus Samuelson.
Well, absolutely, and then and now that that kind of grand old lady of fine Scandinavian fine dining is doing better than you know the past 15 years, I think.
Yeah. Now at Acme, how much of are you pulling from Nordic cuisine as inspiration, and how much are you just trying to push it into something new?
So, I don't think Acme is a Nordic restaurant at all, because you know I cannot run away from who I am and where I came from, but I'm inspired by this land now. I'm inspired by New York. So when I go out in nature here and I pick herbs or whatever I do, I'm inspired by that land.
Yeah.
So it would be wrong to say that it's a Nordic kitchen. But of course, when I came here, the whole way I was thinking, the philosophy of who I was and what I did was Nordic. But now I don't... You know, they still have the same way of thinking food and inspired by nature, but also now I'm very inspired by people and other restaurants and Mexican food, Italian food, whatever is here in this melting pot of city. And I think Acme have its own voice now. It's more New Yorker, I think.
I remember when I went during the first month, and I was like, "This is such an awesome New York restaurant." It was hip and it had that energy, but then the food was also great. And a lot of times in New York, you get like one or the other. And then every time I go back, it's always been crackling and popping and things like that. And it's very inspired by the city around it. You know, with any trend or anything that comes new, like a cuisine thing like that, you're always going to see some people doing very not so flattering interpretations of it. What have you seen that that was a representation of Nordic cuisine that you went, "Oh, that's just awful," or "That's just trying to, you know, capitalize on something new"?
Can you even say that, Matt?
No, I don't know.
Well, I think
you don't have to use names, but
I don't think that I've seen that much here in this city. I think most of the people that have opened up anything Nordic here have done a pretty good job. But if you go to Copenhagen or Stockholm or any other capital city in the Nordic region, you're going to see very clearly certain restaurants that open up, and it's like, "Oh, that dish was at Noma's menu 2 months ago."
Right.
Or, so, you know, obviously that's going to happen everywhere in the world, but I don't think that I've seen that much of that here,
no,
to be honest, which is good.
Pretty holistic and great trend of just, it's like how would you get rip off fresh food, local food?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I think what you see as a rip off more is the plating style.
Yeah.
And the actual ceramics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you'll ceramics see, is like the same.
Yeah. I think you often see, I think the derivative moment to me is you see the people seem to be basing the recipe on a photo that they've seen of the food,
yeah,
but they've never had the food. And
that's true.
You know, those are the low points.
Yeah, when you go like,
but it's kind of amazing in a way. You know, you can get inspired by a photo,
yeah,
and you make something out of that. I think that's amazing. You get inspired by that. I think I feel very proud of I was a part of that once. Mm-hmm. That actually people are getting inspired by this.
That's amazing.
It's amazing. All right, we're gonna take a quick musical break, and we're gonna come back and kick it with Daniel for a bit. Let's get funky here on Snacky Tunes.
I got something here, it's a chance. I'ma make my changes as I go in the city lights dance away the stars. I admit all kinds of reasons why the seasons leave their scars. I am thin as cinnamon and tarnished like these metal cars that drive along the rivers of the tar. I am weatherproof as the rain, and I fooled every lover into drinking up my pain. I am hanging by the edges of my name, but I am warm, so comfortable forgetting about the storm. I love Minnesota, Michigan, Colorado too, Atlanta, Montana, Nebraska, and the moon. Must have been a traveler inside of the womb. Never had a place with a living room. You said a house is a tomb. Well, zoom, 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 here we go. And you know I'm not planning. Isn't this dandy? I've got you and you've got me. This time of year is frozen through, ain't nothing gonna break. Well, I'll take you there and show you where I used to spend my time. Before working, before leaving, before wine. I love Minnesota, Michigan, Colorado too, Atlanta, Montana, Nebraska, and the moon and you. it's easy, go 2 hours with the birds, and I guess they flew. I just can't get a grip on this place, Billy Road. Well, zoom, 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 here we go. Any, no more planning. Isn't this dandy? I've got you, and you've got me.
Daniel, welcome to Snacky Tunes. I remember reading about you guys, I don't even remember, years ago, and then I found out that you were coming over for LaFooding, and I was like, I'm just going to go hunt these dudes down. And it was in the back of Prime Meats, Frankie Spatino's, and I was like, you don't know me.
Yeah.
But we went up to you, and then we had this magical night in New York.
Yeah.
Where we took you, we did all the party tricks, like Mission Chinese food, and then we went to, we got backstage at Webster.
Yeah.
And then we went to the rooftop of the Standard.
Yeah, which I'm staying in this weekend, and completely didn't realize that was where we went. And
oh, yeah.
Someone reminded me when I was coming, or someone told me when I was coming that, yeah, they sometimes give you earplugs at the hotel because there's a club on the roof. And I was like, wait a minute.
Wait a minute.
That was when the Brusnitz took me out and got me really, really...
It was
to the brink, and then next morning, the worst thing about it was that we went after we left you guys, whatever time it was, like 5 or 6. We had like 2 hours sleep, and then we had to go to Governor and rip the heads off 200 lobsters for the dinner that we did that night, which still remains to this day, lobstergeddon. And I think the only time I will massacre at least 100 animals in one sitting, that was
a great dinner. That may have been the best LaFooding dinner that was ever done. It was a real community effort.
Yeah, it was really great, you know, and everyone from that dinner, I think's, you know, gone on to do really great things. And yeah, there's been so many times when, you know, you're sort of, well, you were talking about before, you know, do you realize you're part of something? And completely agree with Matt. So you just do it because that's what you're doing at the time, and then it's only kind of with hindsight and retrospect that you kind of realize that there was something happening. And yeah, definitely that dinner was one of them.
Yeah. Now it's funny because British food has had a reputation and been well known for probably all the wrong reasons for a very long time.
Yeah, it's funny. Like even now, like I went to Tokyo 2 years ago, and I was lucky enough to go with a friend of mine who runs Fuji Rock and Asagiri Jam, which is confusingly, one's Fuji Rock isn't at Mount Fuji, but Asagiri Jam is, and went and kind of got a amazing tour of Japan, and trying to explain to people what a British restaurant was quite I mean, it's quite a task anyway, but everyone was like, so what is British food? Is it fish and chips? I mean, like,
nice.
even people, like really cool people who were on it in Tokyo, like going out eating dinners, like really knowledgeable about food, just had absolutely no idea what it was.
So how did Clove Club get started, which is your restaurant there? And like, I mean, it was an iteration before it became a brick and mortar.
Yeah, I think, you know, we sort of we mentioned the Franks before about just having a story which people kind of buy into, but it's just what happened. And yeah, we were doing a lot of music. We'd moved, my business partner and I, Johnny, we've been best friends since we were 4.
Did you just have some memories right there? Did you just go back for a minute?
I kind of was struggling to describe our relationship.
It's an undying love. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, it is. So the two of us and our civil partnership came down to, which is, you know, since we've had to get divorced, because I've actually got a new relationship with a girl.
Oh, yes,
now.
Congratulations on getting engaged.
I'm engaged, yeah. I got engaged at Easter. Thank you very much.
Beautiful.
But back to the old partnership.
The old ball and chain, right?
Yeah. So we went down to London 2008, doing lots of music stuff. And we were I was working at St. John Brennan Wine. Johnny was working at another restaurant, Great Queen Street. James Lowe was head chef at St. John Brennan Wine. And we were all just basically hanging out. Supper clubs had kind of happened. Nuno Mendes had done The Loft. So Sam Nutter and Isaac and Kobe, James Lowe, all these kind of amazing chefs have done The Loft. So supper clubs are kind of all the rage in London. And we went to a few, and they were just a bit... They weren't particularly... They were a bit lackluster, and we were just in the discussion. We're like, yeah, we can do something like this, so we can, and we can do it much better than anyone else is doing. So we did a little dinner party at our flat, sort of three nights. We turned our living room into a restaurant, and having, you know, slaved my guts over a music career, which I, you know, desperately wanted, and a creative project which people liked, and it was kind of going well. It was just it was quite nice, and also slightly frustrating to have one which just went bang.
And you went, man,
yeah,
just it's like, it's weird.
We do music as well.
Yeah. It's like no. I mean, like, come listen to this record.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
It's like, hey, man, this music isn't really going with the food. It's like, yeah, but these are like the demos.
Yeah,
trying to...
exactly. But you know what? It was a beautiful partnership. We got people to do. Like mixes basically, which we played during the meal. So like,
awesome.
Yvonne Smag did the first. Who else did we have? Andrew Weatherall did one for us.
Wow.
Milo, like all sort of people that were kind of in and around at the time. So there was a nice music connection. And then we did basically three. Isaac did the first. James Lowe did the first. Isaac did the second, who's now my business partner, Clove Club. And then a chef called. Another Robin Holmgren, who's now head chef at 15 Jamie Oliver's restaurant, he did the third. And then over that time, it just went crazy. The first one sold out in 3 days, second one sold out in 3 hours, and the third sold out in 3 minutes.
Is that the rule of thirds I hear so much about?
Yeah, it was just the way it worked out.
So when did you decide, I mean, you know, you have sort of lightning in a bottle at that moment.
Yeah.
And then you're just like, were the offers pouring in to open a restaurant? Or were you just like, we're going to go do something? Because what you know, the restaurant, for those who haven't been, is not just like, hey, we opened up a small thing. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous spot in a very popular part of town.
Yeah. I think we, right from the start, people offered us sort of investment. They could see it was very special. I think the challenge... For us, which I thought we did really well, just naturally, was to take that and then put it into something which was permanent. So it wasn't, oh, you're in a restaurant, but it's in someone's living room. It's like, no, this is actually like, you know, bricks and mortar, like you said, yeah. Yeah, a proper restaurant. And then I think we did the 10 Bells before, which is when I missed Machino. And that was kind of a really nice stepping stone, because that was 3 months that turned into 6 months. And that got reviewed by Fame Ashler and people like that. So then that that kind of gave us the real sort of serious profile, which was amazing from that point. And then we crowdfunded, so that was kind of
that's awesome.
Yeah, so we raised £250,000 and sold 25%.
That's 4 million American, right?
At the moment, probably.
But that's an incredible thing.
That's an incredible thing.
Yeah, I mean, again, you know, you kind of. A lot of people, I think, were like, how have you done this? They're like, it's some kind of like Machiavellian plan, and we're like, you know, entrepreneurial geniuses. But actually, we just did stuff, and then we talked to people, and they were like, you know what, you guys should do this next. And we're like, okay, let's do that. So someone that we knew had raised £1 million with a very canny move. Jonathan Downey, who did the London franchise of Milk and Honey with... Sasha, R.I.P.
R.I.P., man.
So he really helped us do that, and so that was how we did it. But it was kind of the first time anyone had done it in London, which didn't help us, didn't hurt us PR-wise.
No, and then everyone else tried to do it. It's like, man, no one else can sort of hit those numbers.
Well, I was kind of thinking potentially we might get into a discussion about who's doing well in London or what's going on at the moment.
Well, I mean, in the same way about Nordic cuisine, I mean, London is having its own culinary movement. I mean, years ago, if you said that we're going to go to London for like a whole eating weekend, I'd be like, okay.
Yeah.
Like, that's cool. Like, it sounds sort of greasy, but let's go. But now it's like, there's not enough time to hit all the restaurants that you want to hit.
No, it's really amazing. I think, I mean, there's some guys called Somsar who are kind of doing... not directly a similar thing, but they've done this pop-up that's been really well, and it's like northern Thai food, and it's amazing. You know, there's no coconut milk, nothing. It's really, really great food, but they've just raised $550,000 to do their restaurant.
Wow.
So there are people doing it. We're not the only ones.
That's amazing. I mean, like New York, it's a lot harder to define like what constitutes as like London food. that isn't just, I mean, if you step away from your like fish and chips, it's such a melting pot of flavors and things like that.
Yeah, I think there's, I mean, we talked about game before. I mean, we're so blessed in the UK. It's just like half the year of just, I mean, you don't really have to do too much with it. You look through the flavor thesaurus and you get your game, and you just like, which is not to kind of diminish what, you know, as of course some of these amazing chefs do, but you know, you do have amazing produce. And I think there are a lot of openings which people play it a little too safe in a way, and it's kind of lemon tart and, you know, and kind of just kind of classic takes on British dishes, which aren't necessarily progressive. But you know, in a similar way, I think I'm sure you guys have sort of similar quibbles with food in New York. Like, you know, there's lots of great stuff, but there's a few like really amazing things.
I mean, amazing. Yeah, it's tough to find really consistent amazing. Yeah. Something where you go, that was beyond what even I understand.
Yeah.
Would you consider Clove Club a British restaurant?
I think that I would, and I have described it as that. I think that, I mean, everyone has their own interpretation of what a restaurant is and how they would define it. You know, the decor, I think, is very kind of classic. There's a little, sort of few contemporary touches, but it feels like a British restaurant in that sense. You know, and I think the cuisine itself is definitely seen through the British seasons. I think Isaac's probably the most knowledgeable person I know ever met about food. He's just,
it's scary.
It's amazing. And I mean, we got talking about tacos the other day, and he was started talking about the, what happens is that the alkaline process, which goes through to soften the corn to then make the tortillas. And he was like, there's only other three processes that goes through or that happens. One's with like burying sharks in Finland or whatever, and then like that, and then like some other thing. And he's, yeah, I mean, he is a real encyclopedia of all things to do with food.
Yeah. Now, given your music background, what's the soundtrack like at the restaurant?
It's funny actually, because I used to get really kind of sort of quite het up about it. Be like, okay, I've done the next playlist. Like, it was this huge thing,
and then Stay actually, all night.
Yeah. And then now I'm just like, oh god, I just get the playlist done. I'm kind of like, and everyone moans because it's the same music. But I'm like, there's two lunch playlists. There's like three lunch playlists which we do, and they're all like in excess of 15 hours. I'm just like, if you're listening to the same music, is because the person, the host stands playing the same playlist again. There's three of them. Just switch it up.
Just switch it. Just change it.
Yeah, there's 45 hours of music. Worth of music. You know, you can't be working. None of you are working that hard to get bored of this music. but yeah, I suppose the soundtrack to the restaurant is, yeah, I've always kind of tried to find a balance of things which aren't necessarily, songs that you know. Like Brothers on the Slide is kind of a classic. I mean, that's on loads of kind of funk compilations. And, you know, boom, boom, boom. Everyone kind of knows that sort of guitar riff. But then you wouldn't know about Simandy, or you wouldn't, but you kind of, everyone nods their head, and it's got that a melody that's recognizable but isn't necessarily obvious.
We're taking over the meal.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of music, you want to play another song?
Yeah, I would love to.
Yeah, I'm just going to throw you that curveball real quick.
Well, you also stitched me up because I brought records, but anyway.
I'm sorry, man. I should have told you that we hung up that coffin. I mean, it's now a coffin in all senses of the word.
All right. Well, this one's for you, Mr. Cheno. I know you like this one.
Not nearly decisive enough to get a tattoo. That's why I decided to come to you. Cause you're not the kind of guy who's really trying to try to mark his body permanently. So I am asking you to draw on me with a Sharpie. Look, girl, I see. Tattoo.
don't sleep on it, though. I mean, I will sleep on it. I'll think about it. I'll think about it. And normally I'm with a band, so I have a backing band over which I can play a guitar solo, but I don't have them right now, so I'm going to sing the guitar solo. It goes like this, okay.
So I want to get back a little bit to North Festival, and now in its third year.
Correct.
So you got the first year out of the way. What was the first year like?
Stressful.
It was pretty stressful, yes. And it was, we had no idea how to do it or how it would work, how if people would like it or not. So just getting through it was, I think, the main goal. And we were, after a couple of months of sleep, we were ready to do it again. And then we decided after the second time that, hey, let's do it a third time. Yeah. So
that's great. I mean, I think the third time is when it really starts to coalesce. Because you, the first year, you're like, you always got to do it once. There's always going to be a first one. And no matter what it is, sometimes you just got to go out and do it.
Yeah, I agree. And now... I mean, we've done millions of small and big mistakes over the first couple of times, and we're doing mistakes still.
Oh, we're
but we've learned a lot, and we've kind of figured out a couple of things that we think that the experience of Nordic food should be like.
What was the biggest mistake, and how early did you realize, like, oh, we shouldn't have done it this way?
I think actually last year was fantastic in many ways, but the biggest mistake we made was that we simply had too many locations going at the same time.
Yeah.
We had, you know, 4 locations going at the same time, and we were essentially, the event staff was like 10 people, so it was impossible to do it. And we realized that when we were standing in the middle of it. So this year we're actually doing everything in one location, which is great.
I think that's great. So for those who've never been, what is the whole ethos? What is the whole vibe? Do you have to be Nordic to cook there?
No, you don't have to, no.
Definitely encouraged.
It's
definitely
encouraged. We will speak about Nordic things, and there will be Swedish and Danish and Finnish and Icelandic spoken at the festival. But no, I mean, the ethos is come, have fun, try some great food. If you've tried it before and you're a super hardcore foodie that have traveled in the Nordic region and been to all the cool restaurants, we're going to have something for you. If you want to take kind of a more of an academic approach to it, and you want to come listen to some great speakers, we have a whole day of talks with keynotes and panels. If you just want to come hang out and try some Danish hot dogs or Swedish crayfish or Finnish street food, there will be something for you as well. So and bring the kids by all means. So we're really trying to be. One of the things that I think is important about Nordic cuisine is, like, instead of fine dining, it's more of a kind of a fun dining approach, and that's one of the things that we're trying to convey, I think.
That's great. Now, how do you go about selecting who gets to cook? Are there people who are obviously grandfathered in, but then how do you go out and build upon the new roster?
We try to... I mean... Matt has been part of it every year, and like the local chefs that are so important to this movement here in New York, they're obviously always invited back in if they have time and energy. This is, you know, obviously a busy period of the year for all the chefs. But we try to bring new chefs in from the Nordic countries every year. So instead of having repeat visitors. We're trying to find someone new, maybe do something that's a little unexpected, not just have, you know, the coolest names or the youngest names or the oldest names, but just try to bring a different type of chef in every time. Some that might come from a very traditional fine dining type restaurant, some that might come from just, you know, the street food movements. We don't really have a set of rules for who we bring in. It's just we try to bring new things in. And the other thing is also there are a couple of names that are like really strong, big international names. But then they have all that attention already. They don't need more of that. So we're trying to bring in people who do not have all that attention.
Who are the new stars of the Nordic cuisine? And I mean, I know obviously I'll rank them because no one cares about what I say. But obviously, you know, Copenhagen, Denmark, sort of sitting at the most popular, then sort of Sweden. But then you have Iceland and Finland and things like that, you know, with the kids coming up from behind, as they say. Like, what's going on? And, you know, are there new faces in Finnish cuisine? Are there new faces in Icelandic cuisine that you need to be watching out for?
Well, I think in terms of Finnish cuisine is very interesting because it's kind of probably been the one that has been getting the least attention of all the Nordic countries.
How does it differ compared to, let's say, Danish cuisine?
Well, I mean, what everyone has to understand is that the Nordic region is, although it's very small in population, it's pretty big in terms of geography.
Yeah.
So, you know, the Sweden itself is, you know, Stockholm is as far from the very north of Sweden as it is from Rome. So, so there are like four climate zones just in Sweden. So the I would say that the differences are more regional than national. Obviously, there are certain like grandma type dishes in each country that would be kind of more national. But it seems to be, or at least to me, that it's very regional. You're going to see there is a difference between the Danish East Coast and the Danish West Coast in the way they cook. I think that's interesting, but Finland obviously being interesting from the perspective that it has traditionally over the centuries maybe looked more towards the east than towards the west, because it's been, you know, Russia's had a huge influence on Finland and Finnish cuisine and just Finnish culture in general all the time. So they have, you know, a lot of pierogies and types of food in their traditional cooking that comes from that influence, whereas the rest of Scandinavia or the Nordic region maybe looks more towards the south for inspiration and actually also towards Britain and the U.S. obviously. So
who are the chefs that are coming? Who's the fresh faces and from which part of the Nordic scene?
Well, so from Stockholm we have Fredrik Johnson and Peter Andersson coming from Volt.
Yeah,
which I think is a really interesting restaurant. They've been at it for a couple of years, and they just got a Michelin star this year. Really interesting young guys with a very, very strong ethos and very kind of passionate about what they do. We have Trine Vigufsson. My Icelandic is not perfect, but Trine Vigufsson.
Is anybody?
I don't know. he works at the Blue Lagoon, which is, you know, obviously the biggest tourism attraction in Iceland. But they also have a very, very ambitious restaurant called Lava that he is heading up. I think that's really interesting. We have Richard McCormick, who is kind of the face of street food of all things in Finland, which is he's coming over and actually just doing street food for our Finland Day, street food is blowing up as a topic all across the Nordic region, but eating in the streets have always been a very, very big part of even traditional cuisine.
Eating and drinking.
Exactly. Or drinking first and then eating in the streets. I think that's we have Kari Ahinen, who comes from Helsinki as well. Coming from classical background, but it's also interesting to bring in that kind of style into this. So I think there's a lot of interesting things, and then obviously we have our great local chefs that have been kind of the standard bearers for Nordic cuisine here in the city, which obviously Mats is hugely important.
Awesome. Tickets still available?
Tickets are still available for, I wouldn't say all of the events, but if you go to nordicfoodfestival.org, you're going to see all the events. And even if you don't want to buy a ticket for an event, we have our marketplace. It's on the corner of Charles and Washington in the West Village.
Nice.
It's open every day from 12 noon until 10 p.m. And you can just come hang out. You don't have to pay an entrance fee. If you want to have a beer, you buy a beer. If you want to have some crayfish, you buy that. But you can just come hang out and have fun. So you don't have to buy tickets for the experience.
What are the dates?
Good question. We start on the 23rd of September and we go until the 28th. So it's
that's nice.
Yeah,
it's a nice stretch.
It is. Yeah.
Awesome. All right. Well, let's play another song. We'll come back, talk a little bit about the this growing international brotherhood of culinary friends and things like that.
Yeah.
Okay, hello everybody, won't you take a seat and listen close? Today is a story about a young man that you seem to know. Born in Omaha, then later his mom moved to the West Coast, Inglewood to be exact, and that was a shocking fact, folks. Neighborhood perusal, roll up and cruise and try to jack him. He would try to make them laugh and pop like do a backspin. Sometimes they would stall him out, and other times he would be scrapping. This made him into a man to never back down when attacked, and now... Excuse me, can I be myself and spit it like no one else? I think I got a story to sell. Well, baby, you better make room.
Excuse me.
Baby, you better make room.
Excuse me.
Baby, you better make room.
Excuse me.
Baby, be better make room.
Excuse me.
Baby, you better. Can I break it down? 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 Okay, the little boy from Omaha grew tall. Didn't have brains to jump, not at all. Didn't have game, didn't know how to ball. But he heard the melody and that was a call. Didn't have a beat machine, had no gear. How could he write the songs, make them hear?
Moves everything that was a lockdown near.
Pause, mix up for the rest of the year. Now he had beats, now he had rhymes. But he wasn't good yet, took some time. Went to the Good Life open mic one night and saw that he wasn't very good at all.
Oh, no.
But he never stopped.
Trying.
One night he blew it up, I'm not.
Crying.
Ever since then the kid never stopped.
Crying.
Still trying to make him laugh, just keep dying. Excuse me, can I be myself and spit it like no one else? I think I got a story to sell. Well, baby, you better make room. 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 Baby, you better. Can I break it down? 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 Okay.
Woo! Listen close. Seems to know. West Coast.
Well, excuse me, can I be myself? And spit it like no one else. I think I got a story to sell. Well, baby, you better make room.
Excuse me.
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 Baby, you better.
Yay!
So I think one of the things that I've loved about living in New York, and also having the honor of like traipsing across the pond and things like that, is seeing how interconnected everything is becoming now with food. I mean, you were talking about during the break about how the British government is now having a partnership with the Mexican government and sending chefs back and forth, and you're starting to see that more and more, like real culinary ambassadors. And it's, yeah.
Well, I think, you know, there's, in a way, there's kind of, you know, we talked about it before, Mats and Justin talking about the, you know, people doing a photo of people creating a dish off an Instagram photo of something from, you know, something Nordic. And I think, in a way, the internet's, you know, been guilty of homogenizing things very quickly because everyone finds out of everything immediately. But then the flip side of that is that you get to meet everybody, and I think definitely I've seen it. You know, I mean, even before we had our restaurant, I knew you guys.
Yeah.
And you know, that's, you know, you find out about Young Turks because of this, and you know, we kind of met through music and food. Yeah. And yeah, I think that's an amazing thing, and I think that can, there's only positive things that come from that, from these different kind of collaborations and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I get that there's the stealing and appropriation of things, and,
yeah.
But I try and look at it as being like, wow, I was inspired by this dish that I would have never even seen or known about or even know how to get in touch with you. It used to be like impossible to reach out to somebody and be like, hey, do you want to get something going? It's got a very, like, I don't know, even more today, it's got more like, let's start a band type of mentality.
Well, I think another thing that you see that I certainly didn't see when I was in my 20s is you see young people saving their disposable income to travel and eat.
Yeah.
When I was 23, I just ate pizza.
Yeah.
And like wine was something that was, I, you know, was way out of my league. We just drank beer and like bought records.
Yeah.
And I do think that there's a like, if you look around at Roberta's or whatever, I mean, there is a young under 30 or, you know, even early 30s world of people that are like, we're going to go to London. We're going to hit these places. Yeah. We're going to do that. And that didn't exist 20 years ago.
No.
Young people didn't do that. And I think that that's really interesting with the festivals, like what you guys are doing, or things like the fooding, things like that. Like, there has become this like audience that's not just interested in the eating, but they're interested in the philosophy. They want to know where things come from. They want to have a personal relationship with the chefs. They want to be able to like get the dish handed to them. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a different world.
And also, I think this wonderful world of technology has really been one of the facilitators behind the explosion of Nordic cuisine, because it was created by a group of individuals that were chefs and also entrepreneurs, but it was not a government initiative. It came from people who really believed in an idea, and then they were able to connect with other people that had kind of roughly the same ideas around the country and then around the world, which is like Mad Food Camp in Copenhagen. Mm-hmm. When that happened, it was just a bunch of like the most awesome chefs in the world came together at the initiative of a couple of individuals, which was amazing. And it was not a big sponsored event or anything like that. So I think,
yeah but it feels big when, if let's say you follow chefs on Twitter or Instagram, and then all of a sudden the 30 or 40 chefs or food people you follow are all posting about the same thing, and you're just like, well, where's my invite? Well, listen, I want to make sure that we have enough time for one more song and for you guys just to shout out. Why don't we just go around the room? Four Horsemen, how do people find out about it?
How do people find out about it?
Yeah, I mean,
well, we're on Grand Street in Williamsburg. You can come by. That's cool. Our website's fourhorsemanbk.
That's cool. Yeah,
fourhorsemanbk.com. You can make a reservation, look at the menu, check out the wine list, and come see us.
What's your favorite wine in there right now?
Dude, I hate that question. The red one. I like the red wine. That's
pretty good. Oh, I'm sorry.
I like any wine that isn't allocated right now. I'm like, I'm having a backlash against sommelier selected Instagram wines.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So I want people to drink other stuff. There's plenty of great wine out there, and I think like we've got to get over the fact that anything.
All right, fine. Can I rephrase my question? What are you drinking right now?
What am I drinking right now? Last night I had a really awesome bottle of a wine called Red Is Dead.
Oh, so the red wine.
Yeah,
the
it was a great little wine from the southwest of France that shouldn't have been good, and it was just like in the most beautiful little spot, and it was drinking with friends, and it was an awesome moment, and it's like a $16 bottle of wine.
That's the best.
It was great.
Acme?
So we are launching a new fall menu right now. The whole menu's just changed. Yeah, the whole season is just starting again after Labor Day, so we're pretty packed there. 9 Great Jones Street in Manhattan, yeah.
Yeah, it's great. It's so much fun. I mean, it's still fresh after all these years.
It's fun. You know, it's a good place to go with friends and family and just sit and sharing all the food.
Or a date, of course. That's a good way to get some action post.
It's a fun place, yeah.
Yeah. North?
Either go to nordicfoodfestival.org, buy tickets for some of the dinners, or just come by, corner of Washington and Charles, between the 23rd and the 28th.
Awesome. Clove Club?
Clove Club, yeah. We're into game season now, so if you're in London and you fancy a grouse, come and see us. It's delicious.
They're kind of...
they're not too high, as we say at the moment, so they're not too funky. But yeah, if you want to have some really, really funky game, then maybe leave it till like end of the month, October.
All right, speaking of funky game, you want to take us out with one more track?
Yeah, seeing as we are in New York City, I will play something from New York City.
All right, thanks, guys. We'll see you next time.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, Snacky Tunes.
This program is powered by Simplecast.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.